I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we've only got two guests on this program.
Yes, and they've got a lot to tell us.
So much to say, and I didn't want to have to cut any of it short. So yep. I thought we're just going to have two very, very special guests on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first is two extremely talented ladies, Mel and Susie.
Yes, bush poets.
They are bush poets, listeners, mm-hmm. Okay? And apart from being bush poets, they're also bush comedians,
yes.
I reckon.
Oh, they are. Yes. They tell some good jokes.
They tell some good yarns. They tell some fabulous poetry. And they are just really down-to-earth, genuine ladies that
yep.
will keep you entertained. Now, they regularly entertain at the Opal Caravan Park,
That's
don't they?
That's correct, yes. Weekdays, yes.
And apart from that, though, they also open up their home to you,
yes.
Which is called a hidden gem.
Yes, and you do a drive-along tour. So
right.
one of them comes back to the caravan park and then you all follow
mm-hmm.
and you get a tour through their house, which mm-hmm. is just simply amazing.
It is amazing.
What's been done there.
Yep. Yep.
And you get morning tea, which is scones and tea, of course, or
right.
coffee, and
uh-huh.
you get sconed out because there are so many scones.
I never thought I'd ever find myself being sconed out.
Yes, I know.
But the scones are beautiful.
Yes, and
they
get up on stage and entertain you.
They do. They
yeah.
put on a show. And apart from being able to recite fantastic Australian poetry, they're also very funny, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
They've got a great sense
yep.
of humour, a great personality.
They work well together.
They absolutely work well together. And if you are finding yourself in Lightning Ridge, that is one of the must-see,
yes.
I won't call them attractions, but their home is a bit of an attraction.
It is.
The hidden gem.
Yep.
But those two ladies, absolutely sensational.
Yes.
Now, our next guest is Rebel Black.
And she's from the Hungry Spirit.
It's called the Syntropic Garden.
Is that the word? Thank you.
That's it. And the reason why it's called Syntropic Garden is because the way they plant.
Yes.
The plants there, the trees
That's
and the
crops.
It's
a little oasis. You wouldn't believe it was there. And, yeah, it waters itself and the plants all feed off each other.
Absolutely. The way it is, the way it's set up, the way it's watered, because, you know, Lightning Ridge is a very dry place.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it's been laid out is it's self-watering.
Yes.
Absolutely.
No, it's amazing.
Amazing. And Rebel Black, absolutely a wealth of information.
Yeah.
Now, Lynn, apart from all these fabulous discussions, there's only the two guests, but really, really good show this one. We've also got a great selection of music
as requested
by the people we interview. All two of them.
Yep.
So what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Big galvanised roofs and monster pipes black. Pink and white clouds from a chimney stack, red dust and hawks in the wind out back, and here I am at the Isar. What do you do in a town like the Isar, retrenched at 50, become an old miser, drink yourself blind, say you're none the wiser, sit at home with a race foreman whinge? Just over the hill in his own backyard, the landscape becomes a picture postcard, where the colours are soft but the life is hard, on the stations here at the Isar. Tonight's the night of the rodeo ball, before riders and bull and horses stand tall, while out in the park some black people sprawl and share their money on flagons. There's so much more to be understood before coming out here like Robin Hood. The do-gooders do more harm than good without really knowing the Isar. Through the Leichhardt East where fool's gold flashes, fossick around for Maltese crosses, flog them off to the tourist buses, see ghost scums under the moon. Some really battle, some make do. The luckier ones make a quid and pull through. Some perch at the bar like a cage cockatoo. But that's nothing new at the Isar. And it takes a special kind of girl to stay out here in this rugged world. Keep a dignity when the oaths are hurled. I pay my respects to you. And I'll raise my glass to an outback town, to that weathered spirit that won't back down. It takes the courage of a rodeo clown to stick it out at the Isar. Big galvanized roofs and monster pipes black, pink and white clouds from a chimney stack, red dust and hawks in the wind out back. And here I am at the Isar. Never thought I'd return to this lonely track, but here I am back at the Isar.
Oh, there we go, folks. That is Back at the Isar, which is from Johnny Williamson's sixth album. And the album was released back in November of 86. Peaked at number 9 on the Kent Music Report, becoming John's first top 10 album. All right, now we are about to bring Mel and Susie into the program, okay? But before we do that, I would just like to give you a little snippet of their wonderful, wonderful talent. They are, as I said, they're Australian bush champions in poetry. And this is my most favourite poem, okay? In fact, I did request it when I saw Mel and Susie back in 2017 at the Opal Caravan Park in Lightning Ridge. And Mel so graciously recited it for me. Now, I'm going to play you this particular poem, which is called The Man from Snowy River. Now, it's got Mel and Susie and Milton, who is now sadly no longer with us, okay, Milton Taylor. It's from one of Mel and Susie's albums. It's called My Country, Australia's favourite bush verse, recited by Mel, Susie and Milton Taylor, folks. All right, so I'm going to put this on right now, and then after that we are going to have Mel and Susie from Lightning Ridge.
Since the 1890s, one bush poem has held the imagination and the spirit of the Australian people. That poem is The Man from Snowy River by A.B. Patterson. There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away
and had joined the wild bush horses.
He was worth £1,000.
So all the cracks had gathered to the fray.
All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight.
For the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight.
There was Harrison. He made his pile when Pard and won the cup. The old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could stay beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse and man could go.
And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand.
No better horseman ever held the reins.
For never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. He learnt to ride while droving on the plains.
And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast.
He was something like a racehorse, undersized, with a touch of Timor pony.
Three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized.
He was hard and tough and wiry.
Just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread.
And he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head.
But still, so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay, and the old man said,
"That horse'll never do for a long and tiring gallop, lad. You'd better stop away. These hills are far too rough for such as you."
So he waited, sad and wistful.
Only Clancy stood his friend.
"I think we ought to let him come,"
he said,
"for I warrant he'll be with us when he's needed at the end. For both his horse and he are mountain bred. He hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hoofs strike firelight from the flintstones every stride. The man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but nowhere yet such horsemen have I seen.
So he went.
They found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow, and the old man gave his orders.
Boys, go at them from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them. Try and wheel them to the right. Ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills, for never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight if once they gain the shelter of those hills.
So Clancy rode to wheel them. He was racing on the wing,
where the best and boldest riders take their place.
And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with the stock whip as he met them face to face.
Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but saw their well-loved mountain full in view.
And they charged beneath the stockwhip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew.
Then fast the horsemen followed, where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread.
And the stockwhips woke the echoes, and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead.
And upward,
ever upward,
the wild horses held their way where mountain ash and carajong grew wide.
And the old man muttered fiercely,
"We may bid the mob g'day. No man can hold them down the other side."
When they reached the mountain's summit, even Clancy took a pull.
It well might make the boldest hold their breath. And the wild hop scrub grew thickly.
And the hidden ground was full of wombat holes.
And any slip was death.
But the man from Snowy River let his pony have his head. And he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer, and he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet.
He cleared the fallen timber in his stride.
And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat.
It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride.
Through the stringy barks and saplings, over rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went, and he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of that terrible descent.
He was right among the horses as they climbed the further hill.
And the watchers on the mountain, standing mute, saw him ply the stock whip fiercely.
He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit.
Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges. But a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet with the man from Snowy River at their heels.
And he ran them
single-handed
till their sides were white with foam.
He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted, cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back.
But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur.
But his pluck was still undaunted, and his courage fiery hot, for never yet was mountain horse a cur.
And down by Kosciuszko,
where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and ragged battlements on high,
where the air is clear as crystal,
and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky,
and where, around the overflow, the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes,
and the rolling plains are wide,
the man from Snowy River is a household word today.
And the stockmen tell the story of his ride.
My name's Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz, and I'm in Lightning Ridge with two of its very famous characters, Mel and Susie. Now, they are the bush poets and comedians in Lightning Ridge. How are you today, ladies?
G'day, Phil.
G'day, Phil. We're wonderful today.
We're down. Real good.
Sun's shining. Everything's perfect in beautiful Lightning Ridge.
Fantastic, ladies. Now, I'm going to just ask a few questions. First of all, Mel, how long have you been doing bush poetry?
For me, well over 20 years, Phil.
Okay.
Well over 20 years. But I've always been raised with bush poetry. My father has been writing poetry since before I was born,
mm-hmm.
and that would be probably 20 years.
Lucky you can't see your viewers.
Radio's good for that, isn't it?
Actually, we're sitting here in our pyjamas and you don't know.
As I did say, listeners, they are comics as well as fantastic poets. Keep going, Mel. Tell us more.
Well, I've always grown up with poetry. My father, instead of reading us bedtime stories, he would recite his poetry to us, and he'd follow us around the house reciting his latest poem to Mum or my brother or I, whoever would be there. So I've always loved poetry, Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson, my father's work. And in my mid-30s, I started to perform and have just been performing ever since. I love reciting poetry in front of an audience. I love the connection you get with that.
Then Melanie discovered that there's a competition circuit all over Australia. Small towns have beautiful small competitions. Then they go up to state competitions. And if you're really interested and passionate about competing with bush poetry, you can compete in the national title to become the Australian champion bush poetry reciter. So as soon as Melanie discovered that there were these little competitions, she started to go in them. And guess what? She started to win them almost immediately. She had a lot of success.
And Susie was the same when she first started to compete in the bush poetry competitions. The same story as me. Her first competition, she won, and she very quickly rose up and became an Australian champion. So it's a wonderful way to hone your reciting skills.
So quite a few years ago, Melanie entered a competition out in Winton. They were so very fortunate. For 10 years, they were sponsored by Qantas, which of course began its life out in Winton. It was called the Qantas Bush Poetry Australian Championships, and the male and female winner of that competition were able to fly then to America and perform at the Cowboy Poets Gatherings and do concerts all over the west coast of America and some of the central states. And Melanie, in 2004, the very final year that Qantas actually sponsored it, Melanie won that competition, and she got to go out to America and blow their minds with some Aussie bush poetry. Just tell them about the airport.
I got to the airport because I was being picked up by an American couple, and they said, we'll never recognise you in amongst all of the people.
Right.
How will we find you there? And I said, have a look for a 5-foot-tall woman with a black Akubra on her head, because I figured I'd be the only woman in that Denver airport with a black Akubra on my head.
Right.
And I was right. They'd never heard of Akubras in America. They had a sign that said Melanie Hall, and I found them. And over tea that night, she said to me, oh, Melanie, I was so embarrassed. I read your email and I said to Eldon, what's an Accubra? And why would she be wearing a foundation garment on her head? That's a true story.
Unbelievable, girls. Now, when did you actually come together as a working team?
Melanie was very lucky again. She inherited a park out in Queensland, in Western Queensland, in Winton, from probably the best bush poet that we've had since Banjo Paterson, a fellow called Milton Taylor. A lot of the listeners will have heard of Milton and seen him perform. Sadly, we lost him 5 or 6 years ago. But when he packed up in Winton, he left the park to Melanie. And I was practising for the Australian Championship. She said, come out here and just work with me for a few weeks. Get some good practice in front of an audience. Well, what happened was we discovered that we clicked on stage so incredibly well. We've got exact opposite skills. So Melanie likes a nice structured show, and I like to free fall and ad lib everything. And we discovered that, in fact, we learned so much. I learned about structuring a show. Melanie learned about being a little bit looser and going with whatever happened in the audience. We discovered that we performed duo work very, very tightly and well together. But most importantly, I think we are so lucky, Phil. We're so lucky because we learn a poem very, very quickly.
Okay.
We can take a poem the length of something like Mulga Bill's Bicycle, and we can learn that in less than an hour, and we can perform that on stage that night.
Really?
Now, you'll never polish it up to competition standard, but as long as you're putting that in front of an audience, it's in your brain and you're working on that poem the whole time.
Mm.
We're so fortunate that we've got And that comes from knowing a lot of poetry when you're a child and having parents dribbling poems into your ear from the earliest, earliest age.
Which we both had. My father was a writer of poetry and dribbled his poetry into our ear. But Susie's parents used to read her The Pied Piper of Hamelin as a bedtime story. Right. Poetry as bedtime stories, because she's actually Scottish. She was 12 when they came to Australia. So okay. She's got all the British poetry behind her.
Yeah, I grew up with all the British romantic poets, Tennyson and Byron and Blake and all of those, Browning and everything. I just have to say to your listeners, though, I wonder if they know we're in the edge of the outback, 70 k's short of the Queensland border because of all the apostle birds in the background, Phil. Aren't they wild?
They are indeed. We're actually sitting at a hidden gem where we're doing this, listeners. Now, tell us all about A Hidden Gem, girls.
A Hidden Gem's our property in Lightning Ridge. There's an artist here called John Murray who has been in Lightning Ridge since the 80s, and he's an absolutely wonderful man and a fantastic artist.
People will have noticed as they travel outside the metropolitan area that there's a really wonderful new fad of painting water towers.
Yes,
and
there is.
Silos.
Absolutely.
So there's a whole silo trail that you can... some of these pictures are just... they're mind-blowingly wonderful,
aren't they?
Yeah, and same with water towers. So our local wonderful John Murray's been painting water towers. He's off to Bourke at the moment. But he's just done the one in Walgett. And you may know... most of you, all your listeners, of course, will have heard of Jimmy Little. What a wonderful singer.
Yes.
Yeah, so Jimmy was a Yorta Yorta man, but he did have a connection to Walgett. I think his wife came from Walgett. And his daughter, Franny Peters Little, lives here in Lightning Ridge. And John's just done, they've just commissioned that beautiful water tower in Walgett with mm-hmm. the Jimmy Little portrait. And John does a lot of water towers around here. He's a great artist.
He is. Artist. And when we came to Lightning Ridge, I fell in love with the town. I wanted to buy property here straight away. You can buy a mining claim with a little caravan and a shed on it for $5,000 if you're lucky. And I had a couple of grand in my pocket and I thought, let's buy a place. I want to live here. I love Opal. And I really did just fall in love with the country and the people here. And we came to buy a different property, but I think someone was looking after us and it was meant to be the property that we originally came to buy. Didn't work out,
but it
fell through, and we went to the real estate agent. We said to Kim, show us what you've got in Lightning Ridge, and she said, this property's just come on the market, and it's just
And this is
stunning.
The one we're at?
This is the one we're at. We've called it a hidden gem.
It's a beautiful place.
See, the idea in Lightning Ridge is, from the outside, you don't want your property to look really good. You don't want people to think you're on Opal or you've got anything down your mine. So everywhere looks like a tip. Everywhere looks like a bit of a dump. There's old daggy old cars and there's old rusty iron.
Yep.
But when you get behind that rusty iron, people are so creative here. They're so wonderful. They start working with iron or wood or bottles. We've got bottle walls and bottle houses up here out of sheer necessity because they didn't have any other building materials. And so they started, I'm going to have to get another six-pack, love. I'm putting on an extension.
Oh, goodness me.
So this property was built by John Murray. He built everything here. He started with basically a shed. He built what we call the old camp. He's built part of it dug out, so it's partly below ground and partly above ground. It's beautiful cypress pine logs as the foundations of the walls.
We must be the recycling capital of the world.
Yeah.
So everything that our property's made of has been reused, reloved, pre-loved, yeah. recycled.
Mosaic paths that Vicky Murray made from old tiles that she's reused, and windows that have been reused from skyscrapers in Melbourne.
They might have a few cracks, but that just adds character.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And your bottle wall.
Our bottle fence, yes.
That is absolutely brilliant. I think I'm going to build one of those when I get home, actually.
So, listeners, what we've done, we just drilled a little hole up the bum of the bottle, and then we've put a piece of Rio through the bottle and threaded them all up the Rio. So in the afternoon, the sun just shines through the bottles and we get this wonderful, wonderful pattern on the concrete, and you've recycled all your bottles into a unique, amazing fence.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, what about the A Hidden Gem? Let's go back to that just momentarily, because you do performances here. You work at the Opal Caravan Park. And you're pretty much there every day of the week, aren't you? Every night of the week there.
Monday to Friday at the Opal Caravan Park for this particular season.
And we do a happy hour show there for all the...
4:30 to 5:30. It's always family friendly and it's always lots of fun. If there's kids in the audience, we'll get them to hop up and do a poem with us, because we despair, Phil. We absolutely lament the fact that A lot of Australian school children do their primary schooling these days and they never get to hear about Banjo Paterson or Henry Lawson. We ask the school kids who wrote Waltzing Matilda and they say, what's Waltzing Matilda? We're all a wonderfully, proudly, happily multicultural society and we know that and we love that. And I'm a migrant, for heaven's sake. I love this country with all my heart. But there's got to be room for that Aussie culture too. Yeah. There's got to be room for a little bit of Waltzing Matilda and I Love a Sunburnt Country. And the kids are just completely ignorant of it. Yeah, they've got no idea. And our idea is to make it fun for the children, make it really fun.
And when we go to the schools and we perform in front of the children or we've got children in our audience and we perform in front of them, it's so immediate. Children, everything is screen-based these days. Yes. They've all got their mobile phones, they've all got their little iPads and their little tablets, and they play games and they do everything on a screen. But to see a performance that's happening right in front of you that includes the children and involves the children...
Yep. Where anything might happen anything at might any happen. Moment. Yeah. It's exactly. completely spontaneous and anything might happen.
And if we can just switch one kid on to going and having a look at a Banjo Paterson poem or one kid to maybe go and pick up a pen and have a go at writing a poem... It's so rewarding for us. During the school holidays, we sometimes have families in the park and their kids will come every day, 3 or 4 days, and they get up and perform with us every day. And we've had children come and say, I wrote this poem last night.
Oh, wow.
Can okay. I read it? And we say, of course. And they get up on the stage and they read this little poem that they've written. And it's
we have tears in our eyes. We're so happy.
Yeah. Must be, yeah.
Every now and then we get an incredible reward, an incredible surprise. A few years ago we went to a primary school in Warren, which is, as you know, not that far from Dubbo.
Yep.
Warren, Nevertire, Narromine, back down to Dubbo. And the whole of the 3-4 class were able to recite The Man from Snowy River.
Their teacher was really passionate about Australian bush poetry and the entire class stood up and recited that poem to
us.
We
wept.
We were babbling idiots.
We were just, honestly, we cried. There was tears and snot and bodily fluids going everywhere. It was just, and we've been to another school where the whole of the 5-6 class knew the Mulga Bill's Bicycle. Mm. And we so appreciate it when, say, for example, a little town like Orange, a Rotary has picked up the fact that Banjo Paterson was born down there. Now they've got a festival. Now the schools have all had workshops. Now they're picking it up more and more. And it's just a matter of embracing our own culture, which I think is so important for the kids to just to be grounded in that notion of a fair go and she'll be right, mate, and
mateship.
Working hard and mateship.
Well, listeners, I've actually spent a couple of hours here now with Mel and Susie at A Hidden Gem where they do a performance. They supply morning tea. They've got so much memorabilia in here, Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson, and all the trophies that you've won, Mel. You must be, your family must be so proud.
My dad's very proud of me. When I first started to compete and I won my Australian championship, the first one, in Charters Towers, my dad was like a little bantam rooster plucking all the feathers out of his chest. That's my daughter up there. That's my girl.
Yes.
And we've been working together so long now that mum and dad say, have you seen the girls? Yeah. It's a lovely thing to carry on that family tradition because dad writes and recites and his father was a performer and a storyteller as well. So 100 years of storytelling in the family. It's a wonderful tradition.
Yeah, and not only that though. I mean, you're doing bush poetry and you do charity work as well, and you're going into the schools. But you also got this great cruise that you've been on too. Tell us just a little bit about that cruise.
We were so very lucky. Our wonderful friend Grant Lurs, who's a country music singer and an ABC radio presenter down at Wagga Wagga, Grant said to us, "Hey, girls, I'm getting together a breakfast comedy show for the country music cruise." And we looked at him with our eyes big and like, oh, can we come? That's why I'm mentioning it, girls. So we hop on to the country music cruise. It'll be a country music and rock cruise combined.
Right.
So we've got Susie Quattro. Who knew that she was still alive, eh? That's wonderful. Susie Quattro. And didn't we all rock down to her?
Absolutely.
Oh, man, we all loved Susie.
So
she'd be on the cruise. Of course, they've got all the great country music artists from Australia, John Williamson and Troy Cassidaly and all the wonderful artists that we'd know. And
right down the bottom of the bill, the bush poets.
The very last line. Oh, Mel and Susie.
Mel and Susie as well.
It's great fun to do
all
the
right.
cruise. We really enjoy that. It's really...
an exciting holiday for us.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine this. Look, you girls, you're only young. You're not, yes, no, I'm seriously. So,
Phil hasn't been to the optometrist for ages, listeners, and he really needs to go and get his glasses checked. I'm 60 this year.
Should have went to Specsavers.
Seriously, he needs to get back to Specsavers because he's peering at me over the way going, you're just young, and I'm thinking, oh.
What I mean by that is, I know you were 60, but I wasn't going to mention that, but you've still got a lot of years ahead of you where your poetry is concerned. For the for your hidden gem, you've obviously got big plans for that, and you're obviously going to make Lightning Ridge your home for the rest of your life.
I think so. We've been here for 6 years, I think, now, and it's just a love wonderful
it. Do you know it's the friendliest place I've ever lived in my life? And I can't get over. If you want to be part of this community, they will embrace you. The thing about being older, though, Phil, is it works if you're female and you're a comedian, because we're getting fatter and fatter with every year. We just can't shift it.
And wrinklier.
We're getting wrinklier. And do you know you can get naughtier and naughtier with your comedy? The older you get, the better, the funnier that you can be, because you can get away with outrage. They think, oh, it's just an old woman saying that. And it's fantastic. You can get away with blue murder.
Shirley Friend, one of the naked poets, is an absolutely wonderful performer, and she's got to be in her 80s now, and she just looks like everybody's grandma. She's a little short, grey-haired lady, and she says the most outrageous things. And she gets away with it. And we keep thinking, give us another 10 years.
So you could possibly be doing nude poetry in the next 10 to 20 years?
You never know,
definitely.
Mate.
And one other good thing you said about the community here in Lightning Ridge is, if you die, they'll bury you in your mine shaft. It costs you nothing.
We've got a community-based, a voluntary funeral service. Yep. Is that not incredible?
That's fantastic.
It doesn't mean you have to volunteer to die. It's not like a suicide assistant.
I volunteered last
year. Yeah, I had to dig you up. You weren't ready. No one called your number. But it's a beautiful idea that if you're living alone on a camp and living, because we get a lot of vets come up here to escape.
Yep.
We had a lot of people who just have had a gutful of the city. They don't want that life. They want to do their own thing out here, and no one's going to ask them questions or bother them.
Yep.
And if something bad happens to them, it's so beautiful to know the Miners Association will tell all their pals and let them, all their friends know. Mm. The local mayor will do. I find that hard to say in Australian. Mayor, the local mayor will come out and do a eulogy at our local cemetery, and the community will throw on a little bit of a wake. It's a beautiful idea. It works a lot better now that we've got a old fridge from the club.
You struggle to say mayor, but you can say eulogy. Oh, listeners, as you can see, Mel and Susie, two fantastic ladies, absolute wonderful comedians, fantastic poets. And if you're in Lightning Ridge, you make sure you go to the Opal Caravan Park, see them perform there live. And if you miss them live at the Opal, come out to a hidden gem.
Thank you so much, Phil.
Thank you, Phil. That's a beautiful thing.
Well, lovely to have you out here, and Lynn out here, and your little strange small dog.
Yes, which he thinks he's just a little Scottish terrier. Before we wind this up, girls, I've got to play a song. It's got to be Australian. Who's your favourite artist?
Well, Willow, I love John Williamson so much, but I especially love that he's written a really beautiful song all about Lightning Ridge.
Do you know any of it?
I know all of it.
Do you want to give us just a few bars to wind this up?
He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal, like a wombat or a mole. Way out here in Lightning Ridge.
Oh, there you go, listeners. What an incredible performance. Mel and Susie from Lightning Ridge. Stick around for that Williamson classic, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that.
Don't ask any questions. Don't snoop around his claim. He'll be out with a dog and a shotgun. Who knows what he's hiding, or why he makes his stand? Men like him are buried alive with opals in their hands. Well, they say he came from Lismore, that's about all we know. He came for a weekend only 20 years ago. Well, he must have had money in the bank, or he's found a lot more than potch. Every month he sends a cab for another case of scotch. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, He's a lonely soul, he's gouging for the opal, like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Below the leopard wood, below the bimble box, get your thrill on Lunatic Hill. Flashes of dancing color, green and gold and red, mix it with black and you're on your back, digging until you're dead. Well, it's not about a fancy car, it's not about the cash. They passed the hat for a swimming pool and built it in a flash. No, it's all about the opal. You get it in your eye. You see a glimpse of heaven with angels in the sky. And you're a dreamer, you're a drinker, a bull and in a hole. You're a schemer, you're a thinker, you're a lonely soul. You're gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Sing with me. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull and in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Way out there at Lightning Ridge.
Oh, well, there you go, people. What a fabulous couple of ladies they were, Mel and Susie. And what a great song they selected, Lightning Ridge. And that, of course, is from Johnny Williamson's Mulga Mangoes album. Now, that's the 11th studio album by that country legend of ours, Johnny Williamson. The album was released back in August of 94 and it peaked at number 14 on the ARIA charts and was certified gold. Now, before we get our next guest up, which is, of course, Rebel Black, and she's from Hungry Spirit and her Centropic Garden, I'm going to play you a song by, I guess, the man who started country music in this country, Mr. Slim Dusty. Now, the song I'm going to play for you is a number called G'day, G'day. Now, the song was released back in August of 1988 as the lead single from Slim's studio album of the same name, G'day, G'day. Now, the song peaked at number 37 on the ARIA charts, and the song was since been covered numerous times on various Australian compilation albums. The song won Country Song of the Year and Comedy Novelty Song of the Year in 1989 at the Tamworth Songwriters Awards. Two of Australia's finest entertainers. Now, straight after this one, G'day, G'day, as I said, we're going to have Rebel Black from Hungry Spirit and her Centropic Garden there in Lightning Ridge.
G'day, g'day, how you going? What do you know? We'll strike a light. G'day, g'day, and how you going? Just say g'day, 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 and you'll be right. Isn't it great to be an Aussie, taking a walk along the street, looking in shops or buying a paper, stopping and having a yarn with people that you meet down at the pub or at a party, whenever you're stuck for what to say. If you want to be dinky-dye, why don't you give it a try? Look 'em right in the eye and say good day. Good day, good day. How you going? What do you know? Well, strike a light. Good day, good day, and how you going? Just
when Italians meet, they all go crazy. The blokes all like to hug each other too. The Yanks invented hi and see you later, while the pommy will shake your hand and say, how do you do? Now watch out for a Frenchman or he'll kiss you. The Spaniards go for ola and ole, but in the land of the cockatoo, cock hats and the didgeridoo. When you meet an Aussie, 10 to 1, here's what he'll say. G'day, g'day, how you going? What do you know? Or strike a light. G'day, g'day, and how you going? Just say g'day, 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 and you'll be right. It's a greeting that you'll hear across Australia, from Geraldton to Govan Gundy Guy. It's as dinkum as the dingo and the dahlia, and you spell it with a G apostrophe, a D-A-Y. G'day, g'day, how you going? What do you know? Don't strike a light. G'day, g'day, and how you going? Just say g'day, 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 and you'll be right. G'day, g'day, and how you going? What do you know? We'll strike a light. G'day, g'day, and how you going? Just say g'day, g'day, g'day. Just say g'day, 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 and she'll be right.
Oh, hello, listeners. Phil C here in Lightning Ridge, and I am with Rebel Black at Hungry Spirit at her Centropic Garden. How are you today, Rebel?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, Phil. Thanks. It's a beautiful, sunny, shiny, warm day.
Absolutely fantastic here. And is it normally as good as this, Rebel? It's quite warm. It's around about 30-something degrees today.
Yeah,
this time of year, I mean. I know it gets really hot in summer, but...
It is pretty normal for this time of year, although what's not normal for us at this time of year is so much moisture in the air and to have that bit of humidity.
Right.
We're not kind of used to that, so but we won't complain because everything is just lush and green.
Fantastic.
And the ground is soaked through and it's just wonderful.
Well, I'm amazed at your garden because everything here is healthy, it's green, it's lush. Explain to us all about the Centropic Garden. What is it?
Yeah, well, it's a methodology of growing,
right,
which is focused on building soil, planting water, and mimicking nature, basically following what the forest does naturally.
Okay.
So the founder of Centropic Gardening or Centropic Agroforestry is a fellow in Brazil.
Right.
And he observed the forest. He was witnessing the Amazon being cut down, obviously. And was watching the climate adjustment that was coming with that, in decreased rainfall, increased temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started to just look at what the forest did and replicate that with food that he could eat and grow in the short term and then also in the long term.
Okay.
So they've been doing Centropic Agroforestry in Australia for quite a few years, maybe a decade or more, on the East Coast.
Okay.
You know, in typical areas like the Northern Rivers, sort of north into Cairns, places like that where there's a fairly high rainfall.
Yes.
But nobody had done it in a semi-arid climate.
Okay.
And so we wanted to give it a go.
Okay.
I met our teacher, Tiago, at a conference, and I asked him what he did, and he said he planted water. And I said, well, you better come to the outback then. Because we need to plant water. This was before the drought broke.
So did you sort of say, yeah, right, planting water. Like, how does that work? Come on. Like, so how does it work? How do you plant water?
Yeah. Well, when it rains, it's helpful, firstly.
Of course, yeah. Yep.
But the principles of the Centropic Forest is to create as many ways for the water to be captured and stored in the landscape as possible.
Right.
And to be attracted as well. So for rain to come, we need moisture in existence or we need green.
Yes.
It's why we've seen such a massive climate adjustment in the heartland of Australia is because there's been so much widespread clearing.
Okay.
So we see less and less rain every year. The droughts get longer. The rain events are smaller, even though we're experiencing a big one at the moment. They're mm-hmm. still smaller and they're further between.
Yes.
Because there's been such huge land clearing, not just in Australia but other places. But
okay.
So you've got to plant dense. You've got to plant so that you're planting in succession so that the system works together.
Right.
We're taught. It's really interesting, Phil, because I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm with regenerative people. My parents were regenerative farmers.
Yes.
But they still, in my very young years, I remember we were pulling trees down to grow crops.
Okay.
And, you know, mum and dad educated themselves and then later changed practices around that. But we were taught, and I very clearly remember being taught, that trees compete for moisture.
Yes.
In the ground. Mm-hmm. So you plant trees further apart. You don't plant them next to each other.
Yep.
Syntropic agroforestry does the opposite.
Okay.
They'll plant, I mean, in one very small area that we've got probably over 50 species and probably more than 250 trees and at least another 200 or 300 plants of different kinds, silver beet, parsley, okras, different foods that you would eat. And it's the opposite of what I was taught.
Okay.
So the idea is that you're creating a green environment that attracts water, and then in the lower story you're creating as much opportunity like to create type water tanks on the ground so okay. that when it does rain you're capturing as much of it and holding it in the landscape
okay.
For those dry times so that what you then end up with is a deep soil, a moisture profile in the soil.
Fantastic. So this could work just about anywhere in Australia? I mean, if you're talking about arid deserts, it's pretty arid out here at times, but your garden is probably looking more healthy than mine.
Yeah, I think where it started raining after we planted the system.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say that we broke the drought,
okay.
but I am going to say that we've timed it well to be planting so many trees in at a time where we've got that El Nino, you know, a more likely to be rain events coming through.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what would have happened had that rain not happened.
Not happened, yes.
But we have got a system that we are giving a go to where we're just planted cactus as a first phase, which right. don't need water.
Yep.
So we're not irrigating it at all, mm-hmm. and we're just going to follow the principles of the syntropic agroforestry and see if we can build a system that doesn't require any irrigation whatsoever.
Okay.
And if we can do that, then I'll know for sure that they could grow this, use this methodology kind of anywhere.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Now, another thing you're heavily involved in too is the EdgeFest, is that right?
It is.
So tell us a bit about the EdgeFest, because I'm looking here at a brochure. You've got quite a lot of things happening here.
We have.
You know, hopefully the rain that's coming down, or that water's not going to put a bit of a downer on this. But tell us about the EdgeFest.
Well, the EdgeFest was an idea of a few friends
okay.
to bring more consistency to creative activity mm-hmm. in Lightning Ridge at Lischerley and potentially in other places as we grow. For capacity building, for community gathering, for healing, for creativity and culture. And we had we came together, we said, yep, let's do this in a couple of years. We'll give ourselves some time to plan and, you know, make this, bring everyone on the journey.
Okay.
But we applied for a couple of grants. Of course, with COVID, the state government's been really keen to get the music industry and the creative industry back up yes. on its feet.
Yes.
So and we were successful.
Okay.
So then all of a sudden what went from a two-year window went to a 1 month window.
Yes. So this is your first one?
This is our very first. Okay. It's called A Taste of the Edge okay. because we thought, so in a you know, just over a month, sort of 6 weeks, we've pulled together a series. I think we'll end up with about 15 different activities and events ranging from family history writing workshops through to performances on country, in language, of, you know, like Old Dog New Tricks, which is Buzz Bidstrup from the Angels back in the day.
Yes, yes.
So well-known performers.
Yes.
Alongside of upcoming and new local emerging performers as well, and also giving the opportunity for local people to build their knowledge and capacity
right.
in a whole range of different things. So okay. we've got friends that are working with us on this, Donna and Warren Mason, who have been involved in a festival called Nari Niara in Tasmania.
Yes.
And so they've been helping us. We were have been mentored by the Acoustic Music Festival in Wingham.
Ah, okay.
Which is another thread that came through.
Right.
They offered to mentor us. And we've been given great support from Outback Arts, which is the regional arts organisation in this area, and of course the funding from Create New South Wales. So we've started. It started on the 20th of March. We've run several workshops, including halfway building a new performance space here on site at the Hungry Spirit. We've hosted Qigong workshops. We had a brilliant panel session the other night with a group of young artists that are touring through the region at the moment, including okay. Dobby, who's a pretty famous and up-and-coming hip-hop artist with Murawari Heritage and Yemba from Brewarrina.
Right.
And it's just been brilliant. We're planning to develop a podcast that will come from it as well. Okay. So we're recording quite a bit of what happens so that can then be shared to a wider and broader audience. But we're really hoping that it becomes something that throughout the year we capacity build lots of workshops, teach locals how to share their gifts as well as bringing other people in. And that it's when we'll have a, you know, maybe in 2 years' time we'll have that big sort of festival that'll be the big event that lots of people will travel for. But really this one is going to – we've got visitors coming to some of the things.
Yes.
We had a great performance down Billy Goat Lane at Easter where we had over 100 people kind of wandering through and past. And that was a blend of emerging artists and local people who'd never performed before and took the stage very bravely and others who were doing it – who hadn't actually performed in since COVID.
Since COVID.
So for them it was a nice little –
icebreaker, I guess.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, they're like, oh, that's what it feels like again to be in front of a live audience. Okay. So there's lots of layers, I think, to the Edge Fest. And, of course, it's called the Edge because we live on the edge here in Lightning Ridge. We live on the – we're fringe dwellers of the outback. We're not quite in the outback. We're not quite in the, you know, the sort of more lush region, and the opal mining industry is an edge-based industry, and the people here kind of live – an edgier life, you know, and so it felt like there were lots of layers that we could bring to the edge, and certainly the conversations we've been having through the workshops is that's something people really relate to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of what it's like to be on the edge, especially in these times of uncertainty, you know, post-COVID world, for us out here at the moment in the floods, for people post-fires and the people that are cleaning up now after the floods on the East Coast, everyone's on the edge. Their nervous systems are shot, you know, everyone's living on the edge. So we really wanted to just talk about that.
Yep.
What is it like, you know, and invite people into that conversation through arts and creativity. It's been awesome.
And another thing too, you also have some Airbnb, is that correct?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because if somebody does want to come to either the Edge Fest or just wants to come out here and have a look at this amazing garden and have nowhere to stay. You've got some Airbnb, so let's talk about that just
I love caravans. So yes. I love getting caravans that are kind of at their end.
Yes.
Or on the edge.
Right.
And bringing them back to life and then providing, you know, making those spaces available to people. So we've got a van called the TARDIS, which is not named because I'm a Doctor Who fan, but because it's bigger on the inside than it looks on the outside.
Okay, yes.
And we also have a glamping tent, so a beautiful 6 metre round tent, which has got its own little zone on the edge of, on the corner of our block, and overlooks our dam and into the garden. And we also have another property under management of Airbnb, which is the Ridge Castle, not to be mistaken for the Migos Castle, but where we've got a few different spaces that people can enjoy. And it's got a beautiful view to the eastern aspect of Lightning Ridge, looking out across, because of course Lightning Ridge doesn't feel like it's up.
Right.
Because it's not a very big ridge that we're on. But when you're on either side of it, either looking to the west at the first shaft lookout or at the castle looking to the east, you do get a sense that there is elevation and you can see what are floodplains actually when we do get water coming down from Queensland but are otherwise cropping country. We find it a real privilege actually to host people on this land, Yuwalari land. We're just stewards of this country, and the tent actually, I just kept saying to my husband, Michael, we have to put a tent over there. We just have to put a tent. It took about 3 years.
Okay.
And eventually the tent went there. And it's like the land calls you. This okay. land, we know at one point young people used to come out here and stay here as a party pad. They'd yeah. camp here, and Charlie used to camp in Charlie's camp where our tent is now, and a few other people used to live. And then as it evolved from that, the town got bigger. There was a park here that the young kids used to come, and they'd ride their motorbikes, and there were swings and things. And so it always, and then we built our restaurant on site here many years ago, and which of course we had hundreds and hundreds of people coming for, and they'd hear Indigenous elders tell their stories, and the young fellows would dance, and musicians would share, and they'd eat bush tucker. And it always feels like this space has told us you have to make it available for people. Fantastic. So that's what we've done.
Fantastic. Mm. Thank you so much, Rebel, for taking this amount of time to chat You're welcome. With us. It's a beautiful place, fantastic garden. And I'm just wondering if you hadn't had all that rain. So we might have to come back after a big drought.
Come back in the drought.
And see what happens.
Most definitely.
So before I wind this up, I'm going to play you a song. I only play Australian music. What is your favourite Australian song or favourite singer or band?
I've got so many, but I really love Jimmy Little's song, Yorta Yorta Man.
Yorta Yorta Man. All right, there you go. Well, stick around, listeners, for straight after that, Yorta Yorta Man. We are going to be back with more Roman Oz. Thank you so much, Rebel.
Thank you, Phil.
I was born on the banks of the Murray. Yorta Yorta is my mother's tribal stand. I'm her son, but my father's name I carry. As I walk through this great and ancient land, my father taught me all the things I needed, like identity and dignity with love. From his Yuin tribal coastal ways of living, Wallaga Lake and Gulaga Mountain high above. I'm a Koori and I come from Kamarakanja, where my people and my dreaming all began. Someday I know I'll be returning, like the legend of my tribal boomerang. My tribal ways are strong and not forgotten. And though my city ways of living, well, they may be grand, but you know, I can pack it up, yes, and leave it all tomorrow, and go back to my Yorta Yuin clan. The nature of the bush in all its beauty gives me strength in my will to understand that no matter where I go, my river people will be waiting for this Yuin Yorta man. I'm a Koori and I come from Kamarakanja, where my people and my dreaming someday I know I'll be returning, like the legend of my tribal Yoder Man. Like the legend of my Yuin Yoder Clan. Like the legend of my Yuin Yoder Clan.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.